This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
This morning on The Breakfast Grill, we are talking to Dato Zainal Aman Shah. He's the chief executive of InvestKL, which is a government investment promotion agency mandated to attract Fortune 500 and Forbes 2000 multinational corporations to invest in Greater Kuala Lumpur. Welcome back, Dato Zainal. This is, I guess, maybe the third or fourth time that you're on the grill with us?
Yes.
Since inception?
That's right. Assalamu alaikum. Very good morning. Thanks for having me back, probably the fourth time, I think.
I think it's the fourth time. Lots of interesting progress and developments on the Greater KL front. But before we start with that larger performance issue, really an existential issue with the new government coming into place and some discussion really on whether to consolidate investment promotion agencies like yourselves and other investment ministries like MIDA and MITI and what have you. Mm-hmm. Really, what is the proposition right now for consolidation or otherwise, Dato?
First of all, we are under the Ministry of International Trade, which is, as you know, the main ministry to promote investments as well as exports. There has been talk about consolidation and optimization and so on. Where we feel it's the right direction to move forward is certainly to see how we can leverage each other. For example, InvestKL, we have a very specific objective to work with large multinationals, foreign multinationals, and also the rising stars, the hidden champions, to come to Kuala Lumpur and set up their regional hubs. It's a very, very focused mandate. The results are there, the outcomes are there, and the investors certainly are very happy in terms of our engagement with them. So we strongly feel that let's see how we can further play a role. There are big projects on board right now, ECRL, Bandar Malaysia, etc. There's a lot more work to do. So let's think of leverage as opposed to merging, for example, which may not be the best idea.
Of course, vicious competition out there in the region. Everybody wants to invest into emerging ASEAN, but their beauty contest is actually quite savage, right? With the Vietnamese Ho Chi Minh cities and the Singapore of this world, with the Jakartas and what have you. You've done quite well, actually. Last year, you attracted Accenture from Ireland, you attracted CPCG from China, you attracted Birdling from Germany and Zalora as well, as well as Orange from France and MetLife from the Americas. So that's actually quite big names. But, you know, they come into a country which is actually seen a bit of challenges recently. I think last week, the Malaysian Employees Federation went public with some concerns that retirees, in fact, retrenchees and graduates alike are facing the same competition for jobs in the high-tech sector. So that indicates there's not that many tech jobs available up for grabs in the city. What gives?
All these companies, Chuang, that you mentioned, they have a very thorough evaluation for Kuala Lumpur vis-a-vis other cities. And they like the fact that with the new Malaysia, the new government, the fundamentals continues to be there. The proposition that we bring to the table in terms of our ecosystem, our talent, the connectivity, the cost of doing business is by and large relatively stable. Now, when it comes to talent, of course, this is always a challenge. It's not just a challenge for us, but it's a regional, it's a global challenge. It's a fight for talent. The demand for high-skilled talent, data analysts, for example, actuarial scientists, for example, the demand for this kind of talent is extremely high. So I think the question there is, how do we further develop this kind of talent? You know, fundamentally, our talent are hardworking, good English speaking, very good in terms of multicultural aspects. But the world has changed now, and the requirement for this high-skilled talent or talent with hybridized skills, for example, has accelerated forward, and this is something that we need to pay attention to.
Well, it's precisely part of a mandate, isn't it, Dato? Because, you know, it's a demand and supply issue. Places of higher learning, institutions of higher learning will respond to market demand for talent. And if you produce graduates that don't have jobs to go into, then there's a vacuum. For example, big multinational corporations might not have or house their brightest and best in the investee companies. They would have investee countries. They would have all their R&D, for example, back home in, say, Norway or Denmark or America or Germany. And this is a typical modus operandi. They come out here, they do business, they might house their back office operations in this part of the world because it's cheaper and it reaches out into the nether regions of the market. But their talents and the R&D and the brains are back home in Norway, for example.
Mm. I want to stress that these multinationals, when they come here, we really look for substance. So when they set up their centres of excellence, their innovation centres, their regional supply chain hubs, for example, in Kuala Lumpur to serve the region, these kind of activities create high-quality jobs as well as high-quality investments. And they form good partnerships also with our SMEs. We have created a program called the Malaysian Global Talent Program, where we do a lot of partnerships with the universities, very essential component of our ecosystem, both the public sector as well as the private universities, where we run programs when it comes to, for example, internships, building or changing the syllabus, for example, attuned to what's going on out there, doing lectures. A lot of the multinational COEs are very generous with their time in terms of giving back. So we need to continue doing more of this. And of course, there is the discussion about TVET. You know, talent today, if we look at Germany, you graduate with a degree, you must have or enroll into a TVET program to make yourself marketable. We need to rethink that too. TVET is not just about the tradesman or the workshop kind of people, but it is an essential skill. So the collaboration between industry and also academia is very, very essential for us.
Well, what appears intuitive is that the investee corporations, investment corporation, or the investment or the investors in this country, whether it's the Oranges or the CPCGs as well, do come in and they do offer jobs, high quality jobs to local populations. But as an aside, what is the foreign investor perception on the new government in terms of, you know, because investors invest into stability.
Yes.
And for the first time in 61 years, Malaysia has found itself with a new government.
Yes.
And not without its own challenges, as you may imagine, Dato.
Sure. Let's look at the numbers first, because the numbers tells a story. Last year, our FDI rose to 80.5 billion ringgit, up 48%. For InvestKL, we have attracted close to 80 companies now, investment value of 12 billion ringgit, jobs, regional jobs, 12,000 regional jobs. So the numbers are good. When it comes to the new Malaysia, let me comment from our ministry, MITI ministry. Our minister, Minister Datuk Darrell, and the deputy, Dr. Ong Kian Meng, have engaged the investment community actively. They've really, really hit the ground running. We have attended many, many meetings, many functions. I have just come back from the US on a trade and investment mission with our minister. And the receptiveness of the investments for the new Malaysia is positive. Smooth transition. Government is very engaging, fascinated with our Prime Minister. Can't believe he's 93, going on 94. So all of that is good. But we know that we have a lot of work to do moving forward.
Does that equate to sign the checkbook, Dato? Because, you know, being enamoured by new government conceptually is interesting, but to result in money invested in the country is quite another.
Yes, of course.
And it comes from America. America itself is looking more inward rather than outward. And this is a country which is doing a lot more business with China than ever before.
Yeah. Well, they understand the proposition of Malaysia. They understand and appreciate our fundamentals. They understand our direction. We have clearly stated that Industry 4.0, for example, is a clear direction for us moving forward. They understand all of that. But I think what they really, really appreciate is the ability to engage with our new government. We have a really open-door policy. Our minister and deputy minister and our new KSU also very approachable, open-door policy. They have got a lot of feedback through the chambers, through the embassy. So that kind of open dialogue, easy access, easy reach to our powers that be is a very active, attractive proposition for these companies.
There's a bit of a divide though, Dato. When you look at where the KLCI sits on the regional index, as well as the ringgit, both are among the worst performing asset classes in the region so far year to date. But there's a this divide between what happens on these markets and what happens on the FDI scene. How do you address this correlation?
the capital markets are very volatile, Chuang, as you know. You know, one tweet, one comment, one decision here and there, it swings the markets one way or another. We look at long-term investments, and this is where, as I mentioned just now, understanding our government, understanding the fact that we have a direction in terms of trying to attract more high-value investments. They are also, by the way, very encouraged by the fact that when we talk about the five C's of doing business, ease of doing business, to get clarity, certainty, consistency, confidence and continuity, they are very encouraged by our focus on that. Our Pemuda, which is the entity set up by our government to facilitate ease of doing business, is going to restart again soon. So all these factors are really essential ingredients besides just the normal fundamentals that we have.
Still, though, all that being said, you still get the sense that at least of those two of those five C's, there is some policy uncertainty because Tun Dr. Mahathir's time and tenure as Prime Minister, as he himself has said, is limited. And there is some sense and some concern that the succession, whether it's Azmin or Anwar, Rafizi or Azmin, that is not clear cut, even though it's stated publicly that it's going to be Anwar. Mm. But the investment and the money people are not convinced.
Yeah, of course, we are asked about political succession, and this is a very important factor. Our current government has focused on making sure that we are clean in terms of the fundamentals. What I mean by that is, if you look at the institutional reforms, making sure that the fiscal discipline is there, making sure that we remove corruption, making sure that procurement, etc., is all based on best practices. Yeah, so those are the fundamentals and the structure that is being put in place. So we're confident that when the succession happens, it's going to be a handover of a very solid and hopefully stable structure and economy to whoever succeeds. We do not know who will, but in terms of handing over, it will be a very stable scenario.
We are talking this morning to Dato' Zainal Ahmad Shah. He's the chief executive of KL, which is a government investment promotion agency mandated to attract Fortune 500 and Forbes 2000 MNCs to invest in Greater KL. After this, Dato', we're going to come back with some other discussions, especially on FDI in Malaysia. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
This morning, I'm talking to Dato' Zainal Ahmad Shah, the chief executive of InvestKL, a government investment promotion agency mandated to attract multinationals to invest in Greater Kuala Lumpur. Now, Dato' Zainal, last year, or early this year, big news from Dyson of the UK that they would be investing in Singapore over Malaysia, and specifically Johor, where most of its plants are, where it does business with much of Asia. Now, although Johor and Singapore, Johor specifically, is not Greater KL, where your remit sits, I guess it's larger, it's more indicative of the larger appeal that Singapore has over Malaysia and KL, presumably because of maybe its attraction as a destination, its infrastructure, its rule of law, for example. What are your thoughts when Dyson plumped for Singapore over KL or Malaysia?
There are a lot of positives. Of course, we would love Dyson's headquarters and innovation and so on to be in KL. Can't win them all. But in that scenario, as you said, our colleagues in Johor can benefit, Malaysia benefits. Of course, we will ensure that the activities that Dyson performs in Johor and Malaysia are also of the high value and high skill kind of environment. However, there are many other companies, Chuang, that you mentioned earlier on, where they do leverage off Kuala Lumpur and also other locations. It's not winner takes all, one or the other, for example. For us in Kuala Lumpur, we have a lot of positives that multinationals like. Our ecosystem, as I mentioned, cost of doing business. You know, we're number 88 on the EIU list. Number one, you know who number one is, most expensive city in the world. And also our business rankings, by and large, are good. So these factors makes us a very strong proposition for ASEAN and for a growth story in what is a very, very volatile world economy.
And yet, Dato, Singapore continues to take the plaudits and they continue to attract investment. The grapevine has it that they attracted Dyson for two reasons. One of all was the fact that they were able to offer James Dyson a board seat at the Economic Development Board. And the second point of fact was that they were able to offer their balance sheet and to buy equity in the business to help them build out their autonomous car, which is something that perhaps Malaysia is not able to on both fronts, whether it's a board seat or the balance sheet. How else, though, I guess the question really is, how else can Malaysia and Greater KL compete where you can't on those two fronts?
We have to really understand the cost-benefit of each investment. Now, in some investments, which requires a lot of subsidies, a lot of grants, we cannot play that game clearly. Where we look at is a real win-win scenario where the company comes and invests here or sets up a hub here, not just purely for incentives. We have dealt with many cases where the MNC is quite happy to pay the tax. They do not want the incentives because now the global taxation scheme is very different to what it is before. But what they expect from us is on the ease of doing business. They want us to ensure that there are quote-unquote green lanes, for example, when it comes to dealing with immigration, with customs, with many of our key stakeholders. So our services team has been extremely busy hand-holding all these investors, doing the account management, doing programs like I mentioned just now on talent. So these are key factors which we can offer to investors.
This morning on The Grill, I'm talking to Dato' Zainal Ahmad Shah. He's the Chief Executive of Invest KL. Now, one of the things that you mentioned earlier, Dato', was the fact that there's a tax regime which is obviously much higher in Malaysia versus the Singapore's and Hong Kong's of this world. Now, controversial proposition here. Would there be a proposition in turn to rejig the tax structure to make it more in parity with the Singapore's of this world, which would have an immediate impact and benefit for talents and expatriates and investors to come to Malaysia over, say, Singapore?
Mm.
Because obviously the cost of living there is huge.
Yeah, it's not so much rejig because of Singapore. What has happened is that the OECD, for example, has put an extensive study for foreign harmful tax practices, this whole thing about BEPS, base erosion, profit shifting. Essentially, what we need to look at is a lot of substance when it comes to investments. Now, here's where we are always rejigging. Our folks at the Ministry of Finance and Internal Revenue are always fine-tuning our incentives. By and large, the incentives are attractive. But as I emphasize, as I said just now, it's not just about incentives. It's a whole package. It's the incentives plus the ecosystem, plus the talent availability, plus the ease of doing business, plus the cost. It's a whole package. And here's where we strongly believe that we have a very strong value for money proposition.
So what is the narrative now? Because some real estate and construction players are saying that, KL really should be singing a different song. It should really be going beyond the cost proposition, should go beyond the middle income proposition. And really, I mean, as an indicative reflection of that, it is the amount of available commercial office space in KL, which if really KL was all that attractive, would be completely filled out. Supply notwithstanding.
Yeah. Well, the real estate guys work closely with us. They appreciate the fact that we've worked together to create a lot of very interesting hubs within KL. If you just look at Bangsar South or Kerinci, you look at KL Eco City, you look at KL Central, you look at this area where you are and not just down the road, there's Bandar Utama. These are hubs that have flourished. Of course, demand is far greater than supply because all developers want to get into the game now that our MRT1 is up and running, MRT2 is being built. So a lot of the developers want to build a lot of staff options surrounding this transport infrastructure, which is understandable. So what we need to do is continue engaging with more and more companies. We must make sure that we continue to be business friendly because the whole support structure is there in terms of options, in terms of real estate. Companies now are spot for choice in terms of where they want to be. And
correct.
You compare this against other cities, they don't have that proposition like we have.
Correct, but it seems so difficult to improve on this narrative, Dato. When you look at the fact that it seems so incongruous that KL, which is the home of, three of the biggest 10 biggest malls in the world, and commercial rentals are among the lowest in the region. It seems incongruous that even with some of the tallest buildings in the world, and we've got commercial rentals which are rock bottom, regionally speaking. This is good for the investors, but it can't be good for the country because there's something counterintuitive about having low prices at this level.
You're absolutely right. In fact, many expats, many investors comment that our hotels also are...
Hotels, wages, right?
That's right.
Commercial space is incredible.
Yeah.
And some of these buildings are top-notch.
Yes. It's difficult, you know, because for many, many years, we have been known for this very cost-effective, not low cost, but a place where it's very cheap.
So
it's
Which thus makes the narrative all that much more difficult to improve on.
Well, it's a plus and it's a minus. It's a plus because it supports the proposition of us when we are trying to attract investors. But on the downside, as you have said, how do we bring up the wages? How do we bring up the, not to say make it too expensive, but just to raise wages, make prices a little bit higher so that profits can be rechanneled back into development, for example. So we always encourage our multinationals to pay our talent, our local talent, just a little bit more, because if you compare against ringgit against other currencies, for example, we are still very, very affordable. So we want our companies to pay a little bit more if possible.
Yeah, this elasticity where wages are concerned is a real problem because you know, people are just not making enough by way of incomes. Mm. And then now, obviously, you've got the developers eyeing Kampong Bahru as well and, you know, potentially even more commercial space coming on stream. Mm. Before we talk about Industry 4.0, though, Dato, just a point of view from you on the European anti-palm oil lobby, which could be thwarting more investments in this country because, obviously, they're going to be investing into a country which, according to the anti-palm lobby, is unenvironmentally responsible.
Right. Well, our government has clearly responded to that to demonstrate that we do have sustainable practices, best practices and changes that have been made. So we certainly hope that our friends in the EU take note. And
but this trade standoff against the European consortia is hardly a positive one for the government to be shedding at this point in time.
Well, any sort of trade standoff, trade war, whether it is the EU, our palm oil scenario, US-China, Brexit, etc., any of this is certainly not good for the global scenario, not good for us too. So we really hope that all these discussions, negotiations can go and get a good outcome, a win-win outcome at the end of the day. Because any sort of trade war, any sort of standoff is not good.
But that's largely out of your control, right? Because this goes way above yourself.
That's right.
At the SKL.
That's right. So what we do is we have to focus on the day-to-day. We have to continue. We are continuing to engage with companies from Europe, from US, from China as well, and continue to promote Kuala Lumpur as a regional hub for these companies.
Well, the MITI is making all kinds of right messages where Industry 4.0 is concerned, big data, artificial intelligence, autonomous vehicles. But do we have the ecosystem to be supportive of those notions in the years ahead? Because we right now, it's a lot of it is hyperbole.
Yeah, well, I strongly believe that we do. If you look at the infrastructure, we're already talking about 5G. We have no issues with Huawei at the moment.
Despite all the brickbats?
Well, our government has done the studies and we are aware of what are the potential issues. When you talk about infrastructure, there is a lot on the way. Talent, I think, is something that we need to really focus on because other factors when it comes to embracing Industry 4.0 and all the high-tech stuff, our economy is very hungry for that kind of technology and the future and so on. So we have to be future-ready. We have to focus on our talent and also our policies in order to remain very competitive.
Of the plethora of technologies that was just named earlier, which is the most likely to take off in the next, you know, immediate term, 1 to 3 years, for example?
Quite a few are already here. Companies here are already embarking on artificial intelligence. Companies here are embracing the cloud. They are experimenting with a lot of new technologies. That's the kind of activities that we want here. It's no longer a proposition of offshoring or shared services. We want these innovation centres, the centres of excellence, to be here. They are here already, and it gives fantastic opportunity for our local talent.
So I think your target is 100 MNCs. You've got to 78, I think. So you've got about another 20 odd to go.
Yes.
What are some of the names that you're talking to?
Well, big names. From
as opposed to small names?
Well, and also the rising stars, the hidden
yes,
champions.
Right, right. Yeah.
So what we hope the government will do is to continue to give us the resources that we need, the budgets that we need, the mandate, expand our mandate if possible, because we are hungry to do more for the country.
Absolutely. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Very enlightening in your candidness, Dato. So thank you for coming to talk to us.
Thank you, sir.
That was Dato Zainal Ahmad Shah, the Chief Executive of InvestKL, a government investment promotions agency mandated to attract Fortune 500 and Forbes 2000 MNCs to invest in KL. BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile for unlimited experiences. Baru la best.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.